Shri Brahmana Uvacha, Vedaham Asura Shrestha, Bhavan Nan Varya Samataha, Iho Paramayon Rinam, Padan Yadyatma Chakshusha. Saintly Brahman said, O best of the Asuras, Prahlad Maharaj, who are recognized by advanced and civilized men, you are aware of the different stages of life because of your inherent transcendental eyes, with which you can see a man's character, and thus know clearly the results of acceptance and rejection of things as they are. So, wonderful section, this, of the Bhagavatam. The main issue that I see going on in this section is that you can't judge a book by its cover. And it's interesting that both this Avaduta Brahman and Prahlad Maharaj are able to recognize each other for who they are. And it's ironic, you know, on the one hand you have Prahlad Maharaj, who is the king and is in all likelihood, you know, regaled in all sorts of stately attire. And sometimes, you know, when people are sort of looking externally so kind of grand, we doubt whether they have saintly qualities. We think they're sort of enjoyers and they're into enjoying and controlling, and their egos are more than likely to, you know, out of all proportion. So appearances can be very deceiving, because Prahlad Maharaj isn't like that at all. Prahlad Maharaj is just completely pure and saintly. And on the other hand, you have this person who's dressed and appears almost in an opposite light. He's just lying on the ground, not clean, hardly wearing any clothes, and yet he's also very pure and saintly in both cases. And they're able to recognize that in each other because of their transcendental vision. They're able to see the internal level of each other, not just the externals. And therefore, they're on the same level. They're both devotees. They can have this conversation and have this beautiful exchange because they're on the same level. There was one section in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada says that Shukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, they were both on the same level. It appears that one's on a higher level. He's the one who's teaching. And then the person's on this lower level being taught. One is in a superior position, one's in an inferior position. But Prabhupada said that Shukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, they could have just swapped seats just very easily, because they were actually on an equal level, both pure devotees. Parikshit Maharaj could have been giving the discourse just as easily. And the same applies here. You know, they're just having transcendental exchange. You know, a pure devotee sees equally at all times anyway. And also, when Bhagadatta gave the class last time, and we were talking a little bit about the whole phenomenon of giving class and the quality of the listening, the quality of the speaking, of course, for there to be conception of knowledge of Krishna, of the truth — Krishna is the truth — for there to be conception of Krishna, there must be the qualified speaker and the qualified hearer. So in one sense, when there is qualification on both sides, it really doesn't make any difference who's sitting here. that's academic. It could be anybody from the audience, you know, sitting here, and the person sitting here there. And it'll be equally as exultant and an event. But somebody's got to sit here and somebody's got to sit there. So in this case, we see Prahlad Maharaj is... Hang on. Is being honored by this Avaduta Brahman. And the Avaduta Brahman says, normally I just sit here, I'm just very grave and I'm very silent, but because I can see I'm in this wonderful association, then I'm enlivened, I want to speak. And he starts to actually give a wonderful discourse in this chapter. In many, many places in the Bhagavatam, this thing of you can't judge a book by the cover is going on. In so many places, just as in you know, we see Vamana Deva appeared as a little dwarf Brahmin, and Bali Maharaj just took him at face value. Shukracharya, Bali Maharaj's spiritual master, could see that there was something behind the appearance, and he didn't, because he's the spiritual master of the demons, he didn't trust Vamana Deva. He was able to see that internal level, but, you know, he's a very fruitive person. So he was seeing in such a way that wasn't really benefiting him. He was wanting to deny reciprocating with Krishna. And Jad Bharat appeared as, you know, actually somebody who was mentally retarded. But then, given the opportunity, when he spoke with King Rahugana, it was just totally speaking the absolute truth. Krishna, who was the absolute truth. And we have to contend with this, because we're you know, not looking like ordinary people, and people judge us by our appearances. So... Prabhupada said that the devotees, because, you know, people are going to be taken aback by your appearance, and they're going to be taken aback also by your consciousness. So in the beginning, people will not trust you. They may even hate you. They'll be paranoid. In course of time, when they see you sort of, when they see that we've been around for some time, that will go into a transition, and they'll start to then make fun of you and think you're just, you know, they see that you're not actually a threat, which they suspected at the beginning due to their insecurity. People are very insecure in this world. So because of that insecurity, they see something different and they kind of think it's a threat. That phase will pass, and it'll shift into a phase where they just start... Because they still haven't known it. They still don't know who we are. They don't know who Krishna is. They don't know who Krishna's devotees are. So then it moves into a phase of where they just make fun of you and ridicule you and laugh at you and treat you, you know, hari hari and this sort of thing. They know we're not going to hurt them, but they don't know who we are yet. And he said the third phase is when they actually do get to know you, then they will love you. And when they actually start to imbibe the association of Krishna through the medium of his devotee, then they will start to love you. I'm reading this book by Hayagriva at the moment called The Hare Krishna Explosion. Has anyone read that? No? Classic book, brilliant. It's on a par with Mukunda Maharaj's Miracle on Second Avenue. So artistic and poetically written and personally written. So he describes this episode where I just can't resist this. This isn't on the subject, but it's such a classic, amazing point that when Prabhupada came on the Jaladuta, and he got off the Jaladuta, and you know there he is on the pier, wondering whether to go left or right. Just literally a couple of hours later, Hayagriva and Kirtanananda Maharaj, who were at that point Howard Wheeler and Keith Ham, those two, a couple of hours after Prabhupada got off the Jaladuta, those two got on the Jaladuta and took the Jaladuta to Bombay in search of a guru. Isn't that amazing? I thought that's just a phenomenal bit of information. And then they went to India looking for a guru. They couldn't find a guru. They came back. And then just literally days after he got back, Howard Wheeler sees this little man walking down, this little man in robes, the same robes that he saw in India. He sees this little man jauntily walking down the street of New York. And he thought, wow, is that a apparition? And he just raced up to Prabhupada and said, are you from India? And Prabhupada said, yes. He says, I've just been to Calcutta myself. And Prabhupada said, oh, very good. And then they just got talking. And Prabhupada said, I'm staying at one place. And you can come and listen to some lectures on Bhagavad Gita. And Howard Wheeler said, yeah, that sounds really good. Yeah. And then Prabhupada said, come, I'll show you my place. And they went straight over there at that point to 26 Second Avenue. They walked there together. And then Howard Wheeler, Hayagriva later, saw everything. And then he brought the rest of his crew from the Mott Street. They were called the Mott Street crew. Wally, who became Umapati, and Keith Ham, who became Kirtanananda, they started coming regularly. Right. So then that's not the point I'm making, but the point I'm making is that at one point Prabhupada was getting quite a good attendance, and he declared to everybody, said, if anybody wants to do full-time service here at 26 Second Avenue, they can stay in the temple room rent-free, provided they're prepared to do full-time service. So instantly Keith Ham, Kirtanananda, was the first, you know, okay, and he just moved out of Mott Street, he moved straight in. And he's so fired up that he instantly started, he just wanted to be a devotee, so he started to wear the robes. At that point, nobody else was wearing a dhoti and kurta except Prabhupada. Everyone else was a little kind of nervous. Even though it's the hippie era, people are wearing all sorts of outrageous clothes. This is more than just outrageous. Because this is kind of declaring you to be some kind of member of a sort of unknown sect. So, you know, I mean, hippies, you see a hippie, it's just boring to see a hippie, you know. Oh, just another guy with flowers in their hair and patched up jeans and, you know, it's just quite mundane. Everyone's doing it because they're just following the leader. So Keith Ham, he started to wear a dhoti and tilak and kurta, and he was just going around his daily business doing that. And the others were watching the reaction, and he was getting a lot of reaction from people, you know. And at that, once he'd moved into the temple, Keith Ham decided, I'm going to go down to the welfare department and try and get some government money to sort of help me sort of stay there. I'll tell them some story or another. Try and get some, because they don't have a social welfare system like we do in England, as developed as we do in England. So he went down there, and because he was wearing his dhoti and kurta and tilak, they thought he was a nutcase. They thought he was a total nutter. You know, he didn't even get to sort of like make his application. They just put him into a psychiatric ward. He was put into Bellevue psychiatric ward. This is, you know, And he was there for weeks, and Hayagriva and Wally, Umapati, his old buddies from Mott Street, every day. There was only a one-hour visiting period between 1 and 2. That was the only time anyone could visit these people in the psychiatric ward. So they'd come between 1 and 2, bring the news of what's going on at the storefront, and bring him chapatis and dal and a bit of sabji. And that went on for weeks. And Prabhupada said, what's he doing there? Why doesn't he just come back to the temple? And Hayagriva said, they won't release him, Prabhupada. You know, they think he's actually insane. They think he's crazy. And that was the point, right at that point, is when Prabhupada wrote that essay called Who's Crazy? Right? Because that's the question. Who's crazy? Is you know, Kirtan Ananda crazy, or are the people who put him in there crazy? So, Kirtan Ananda, at one point, you know, he was desperate to get out. And they said to him, the only way you can get out is if one of your parents sign a form and take custody of you. And Hayagriva said, why don't you just ring up your dad and get him to sign the form? It's simple. And then it turns out that Kirtan Ananda's father is a Southern Baptist preacher. You know, and those ones, are they're the ones who are really, you know, you're going to burn in hell and that type of thing. Really full-on, hardcore kind of characters. And his father just point-blank refused, because his father said to him, he said, no. He said, your leader is the Antichrist. I'm not signing you out so you can go back to the Antichrist. That's Kirtananda's, you know. So that's, again, who's crazy? So he ended up doing this whole theater to his father and said, I'm giving up Krishna. And, you know, I'm just going to come back home and start again. And his father was so relieved, he came straight over and signed the form. And then they're driving back to, you know, his father's house. And at the first set of traffic lights, Kirtan Ananda just burst out of the car and ran back to the storefront. So, otherwise, he wouldn't have gotten out. And but this is judging the book by the cover, you know, by sort of... we have to be very careful about doing that. It's, you know, like the Sankirtan devotees know that. The most unlikely people take books. And, you know, you just don't know who you're dealing with, just from externals. And I was thinking, you know, why is it that some people have access to the internal level and others don't? You know, why is it that these people at the welfare department couldn't see Keith Ham at that point is a sincere, you know, very sincere person and striving to be a good, not just a good, but a transcendental person? Why couldn't they see that internal level? Why is it that Prahlad Maharaj can just straight away see the internal level of this person who's just lying on the street? Other people would think, oh boy, let's, you know, get away from here. Who knows what that guy's going to do? Other people with their insecurity are going to sort of just veer away. And the Avadhuta Brahman can see the internal level of Prahlad Maharaj. What is it that allows one to see the internal level? It just struck me this morning that what it is love. If you have love for Krishna, and then you have understanding of, you know, that Krishna... this is one point that Hridayananda Maharaj once made, that if you understand that Krishna is controlling everything and that Krishna loves you, then you can be very secure inside. You can be very secure inside. Just like a child can be secure when they know that their father is strong and capable and that their father loves them, that kid knows that my dad's not going to let anything harm me. And therefore, that kid can get on with the business of exploring the world and learning. And similarly for us, if we know Krishna is who he is, Supreme Controller, and that Krishna loves us, if we're not insecure about that Krishna loves us, we're secure about that, then we can get on with exploring the world and we can actually start to unlock the internal level. You know, hang in there until the internal level starts to manifest. Just one very quick example is in Stevenage. I went with Nara on Saturday to Stevenage and I met this guy. He looked a bit rough, you know, he was unshaven and he looked very kind of morose kind of character. And he's, he's trudging down the street. I'm wondering, okay, well, anyway, Krishna's sending him next, so I'll see how we get on. And I stopped him, and it turned out such an amazing exchange. I told you a little bit about him. Just such a far-out guy. It turned out that he'd had 10 years of a nervous breakdown. For 10 years, he said, I was actually going through a very traumatic period where I was going through a nervous breakdown. He says, I was totally paranoid. He says, everyone I met, I thought was out to sort of like do me in, was going to exploit me, was going to cheat me. And then he said, but I can see in your eyes that you're different, you're okay. And I said to him, I said, well, you caught me on a good day today, and just as a joke. And then he smiled, and we kept talking. He said, when I was in the middle of my nervous breakdown, I realized that I have to call on God to help me. There's no one else going to help me. And so as I did that, slowly I started to lose my paranoia. My paranoia started to kind of, and I started to see things a little bit more clearly, you know, who's friend and who's enemy. And he said, whenever I started to get these realizations, I would thank God. And whenever I said the right thing, I would thank God for that. And whenever I would do something that was the right thing, I would thank God every time. And I said to him, that's really great. You know, that's gratitude. Gratitude means that, you know, if somebody does me a favor, and then, or if I do somebody a favor, let's put it this way, I said to him, I remember now, I said, if I do somebody a favor, and I see that they really appreciate it, that's a loving exchange, that's a reciprocation. And then I'm happy to sort of do them a favor again. I'm looking forward to, I'll start to go out of my way to try and do them another favor because I know they appreciate it. And that's what we all want, is loving exchanges. And he said, yeah. He said, it's amazing that I met you because I'm from Hitching. I never come to Stevenage. And I just didn't know, I don't know why I came here today. And I think now that I came here to meet you. I said, that's really nice of you to say that. And then somewhere in there I said, are you a vegetarian? And he said, wow. He says, I'm just about to become one. It's been working me over all this time whether I should eat meat or not. And he said, I'm just about to become one. So then I gave him the higher taste. And I said to him about, I was saying to him about how, you know, when you're saying thank you to God and when you hearing God instruct you, Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Sitram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shishi Karani Tai Ki Jai, Iskan Guru Vrindi Ki Jai. And when you're hearing God instruct you, what's happening, I said to him, is that you're, by that connection and by that association, you're becoming purified. You know, just because you called out to God at that time when you was in your dark time, you know, you allowed the light to enter and you started to become purified. And because God is absolute and God is pure, just by that connection, you're becoming purified. And he accepted that fully. And it was just a wonderful exchange, a very unlikely person. And so this, you know, thing about purification, I've been just reading in the second canto just the last few days. Krishna's talking about purification and how it's the ability, this keep in mind this point about Krishna's controlling everything and Krishna loves you. Keep that in mind on one hand. And on the other hand, it's the acceptance of Krishna's inconceivable plan. That Krishna has a purpose for putting us in different situations. And there can be situations of tribulation and situations that are unpleasant. Because really, when you think about it, by definition, purification, there's some inconvenience or there's some difficulty involved in purification. But in this in here, Prabhupada is saying that a devotee looks upon, does he say purification or tribulation? Just a moment. He says that he looks upon tribulation as benediction, provided that a pure devotee of the Lord accepts tribulations as favors from the Lord. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two, meaning between tribulation and benediction. There's no difference whether the devotee is getting a benediction or whether he's getting a tribulation. Here it is as well. A devotee's duty, therefore, is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as benedictions. This is quite profound. This is quite profound. And this is of the essence in understanding how the purification process works. Because sometimes devotees don't accept tribulations and difficulties as benedictions. They don't accept it as purification. They sometimes, you know, there's this thing that, you know, life's not fair, and there's a very material payoff when you don't see things as the plan of the Lord. You can sort of see things that, you know, this devotee offended me, this was unfair, this is, it's not reasonable, I don't deserve this, I've been victimized, I mean, treated bad, you know. And we don't see it as being Krishna's plan and as Krishna's blessing in order to facilitate our purification. There is a purpose. When it says that it's the inconceivable plan of Krishna, right, it's only inconceivable until we become purified to actually see it, to see what the purpose was. You see? So while we're getting purified, we may not see the plan, but if we trust that Krishna loves us and trust that Krishna has a plan and has a purpose, then we can not have this negative reaction to the tribulation. That's what Bhishma was saying to Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira is lamenting and saying, oh, it's because of me all these people got killed. I feel so bad about myself. And he's saying, don't feel bad about yourself. You know, you have acted according to three principles, basically Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, at all times. You have been acting according to these three principles. So therefore, there's nothing to lament. Because as long as you act according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, it means that Krishna's plan is unfolding. There's nothing to lament in the unfolding of Krishna's plan. There's no better plan. There's nothing more auspicious. So just let it unfold. Don't fight So that's an important, that to me that's a very important point about how purification works. You allow the purification to happen when you can accept the inconceivable plan of Krishna.